We here at MindCurrent are obsessed with helping the world one person at a time feel better every day, sun up to sundown. Enjoy an inside look behind the scenes with the creators and leading experts on the human mind and emotional energy. Here's your host, Dr. Drew Brazier.
Welcome to the fifth episode of the MindCurrent podcast. This is a great conversation that I had with Bill, who is one of our experts in the MindCurrent app, which, speaking of the MindCurrent app, we're very grateful for the thousands of users that have continued to come into the app and the positive feedback that we're getting. We continue to get many great reviews every day, and we really do appreciate your honest feedback and reviews. And we just recently had a great review by Christina, who talked about, and she went at length, actually, she posted it on her blog about the MindCurrent app being able to, in stressful situations, help you get a recommendation to lift your positive energy. And she talked about how it felt so timely and just the perfect fit for what she was needing in those moments. You'll find that as you go through the MindCurrent app, which sponsors this podcast, you'll find that it's like having a guide of being able to help you feel more confident in your journey, feeling more positive energy, and being more aware of what's influencing you moment to moment and day to day. So if you haven't given a shot, go give it a shot. You can download it for free. And please do leave a review in the app store, whether you're on Apple or on Android. Please do share that feedback, and we appreciate it very much. Okay, we're going to dive in here to this episode with Bill. And Bill has so many different levels and types of training. He is a master in meditation. I wouldn't mess with him physically because he can pull off some martial arts on you pretty quickly. Yet he is one of the kindest people and very bright, a business owner himself. Also trained in the field of psychology and counseling, very rich history. And you're going to get a chance to dive into some of his own personal story and things that he's done to shift the energy in his own life. So let's go ahead and dive in here to episode number 5 with Bill. Let's go. Glad to be here with you. Actually, we are pretty far apart. You're way on the northeast side. I'm way on the northwest side of the United States.
Opposite ends of the coast.
That's right, man. But I appreciate you taking the time. I know that, you know, you've got a lot of stuff going on for yourself, and this is going to be a great time that we get to spend together working on this. So, you know, one thing that's interesting about you, Bill, that I've learned is there's like a never ending, like, holy crap, I didn't know that about you. I mean, from like martial arts stuff to just, you know, your meditation. I mean, everything, you seem to have your hands in so many different things. So I'm just going to go straight out of the gate here and ask you this question of, like, what is the number one thing that brings you, like, the most enjoyment in life? Like, what really flips your switches?
I guess a couple. So the first that comes to mind is music. So I've always been obsessed with music. I used to have my own radio show called The Soul Kitchen. So it's like soul music, funk music, jazz, hip hop, reggae.
That's crazy.
Yeah, so that's probably my number one thing. I mean, a close second is being in nature, especially by the ocean.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, we're in Massachusetts by the coast. So every summer we're on the beach as much as possible. So yeah, it's kind of a tie with music and nature.
Yeah. So what's the three, like, if I hijack your phone, I figure out your passcode, which, I mean, hey, never know, might be able to figure that out. and I get into it, and there's those three jams that are on there that, you know, maybe people do or don't know that you would have those three first jams that I would find on your hot list. What would it be?
So you mean just like all-time jam records?
All-time, man. Like your all-time, like those okay. are my go-to make me happy type stuff.
Well, go-to make me happy, I mean, whenever I'm in a really bad mood, Bob Marley, it's kind of just immediately changes how I feel. Miles Davis, Kind of Blue, that's very tried and true. So one of the stories I tell about that record is there was a some project where we sent things to outer space in case there's intelligent life. And one of the things we sent was a record with a bunch of different music, but one of the albums was Kind of Blue. So it kind of speaks to how good that album is, that when we want to send it to outer space in case there's other forms of life, like, this is what we have. So I like that. And then there's a lot of soul music. I would say there's an Aretha Franklin, one of her early records, I Never Loved a Man the Way I Love You. That would be one of my Desert Island albums.
Yeah.
Super soulful, really old school. So yeah, that's really good.
That's awesome, man. That is so cool. Okay. All right. All right. I'm feeling you. That's great, man. Yeah. And didn't you, well, I guess you DJed as well in that, yeah, all of that, right?
Yep.
Yeah, what you were doing. Okay. Okay. Cool, man. Well, now we can have some insight to that. And I think you can always learn a lot by people's music. And have fun with it. So, you know, it's interesting. You've kind of combined a business career with your love for, you know, helping people in the field of psychology. But what is it that, like, is your, what drew you, I guess, to psychology? Like, what was it that I want to go do that?
Yeah. So it was always, it actually started with Buddhist psychology first. So I first got my first book on Buddhism when I was like 14. And I've kind of have never stopped. So it's always been an obsession of mine. And then it went into anthropology. So when I was an undergrad, I studied anthropology, focused on Asian cultures, and then spent after college about 6 months traveling throughout Asia, studied in some different monasteries and did a lot of different retreats. So one of my obsessions has always been that there's so much within Buddhist psychology that works and is powerful, but there's a lot of cultural baggage. So I've always tried to figure out, you know, what is the essential nature of these practices that work and what is just the cultural stuff that we can kind of discard. Mm-hmm. So it started there. And then from there, I started getting more into Western psychology, and then ended up getting my master's in counseling psychology and worked as a therapist for a little while. But I would say, yeah, it started with the interest in meditation at a pretty young age.
Yeah. Well, that's cool, man. I can relate to that, right? I mean, when I was a youngster, that's when I really started to fall in love with understanding the human mind, but more importantly, helping other people. Mm-hmm. And then I realized, whoa, the field is a lot more than that. but as you talk about meditation, like, I mean, what's the most simple way you could break it down? Because people know, okay, meditation is good for me. One, it frustrates me. And two, am I doing it right? And three, like, what the hell is it anyway?
right? Yeah, I guess it's a hard question. I think the first thing I would say about it is I think there's a lot of misconceptions about meditation. Mm-hmm. Meditation is, you know, encompasses an extremely large variety of practices. You know, there's meditative practices that we think about as mindfulness, where you're just present in the, you know, sitting in the present moment. I think that's kind of the essence of meditation. Mm-hmm. But I mean, in the Tibetan tradition, there's literally thousands and thousands and thousands of practices of visualizations and concentration, or practices where you cultivate compassion or change your sense of self. So to me, like, if you really want to understand the essence of what I think meditation is about, it's not the tradition I practice, but Zen Buddhism, I think, kind of nails it on the head, and their term is just sitting, or zazen. So in that sense, you're just being present with what is. Mm-hmm. You know, so typically the mind is always jumping around. So in Buddhist thought, it goes towards things it likes and tries to cling onto them, mm-hmm. tries to push away things it doesn't like, or mm-hmm. it just blanks out and is kind of just not present. Mm-hmm. So the idea of how you suffer less is you can ultimately just be present with everything. So, you know, over time through meditation, you can be present with really pleasurable experiences, but you don't grasp onto them. You let them come and go. So mm-hmm. that could be, you're having like a beautiful meal and you can just really enjoy it and be present. But when it's done, it's done. And there's no trace left, as they'll say. But the same can be, you know, said about very difficult, intense experiences. You know, so typically if we have a very negative emotional experience or fear or anxiety, we see that as a problem in the West. Mm-hmm. But the meditation tradition is the problem isn't the emotion, it's how you relate to the emotion. So it's a very different way of thinking. So, you know, typically you're not trying to manipulate your experience or change your emotional state. You're just trying to get rid of the reactivity about it and just let it come and go. And a lot of times that's kind of the best way to deal with difficult emotions is that, you know, it's kind of corny, but the therapist saying of what you resist persists. Mm-hmm. It's the same thinking in the Buddhist psychology of if you keep clinging to something or manipulating the experiences, they would say, you actually make more of it and suffer more. Whereas if you can just say, yeah, you know, maybe this experience sucks and it's uncomfortable or whatever, if you can just be present with it, it will just come and go on its own.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Well, it's like tug of war, right? The harder we pull, the harder the other side pulls.
Yeah.
We stop the tug of war, right? You know, that's, I know that's, they use that a lot in acceptance commitment type of work.
Yeah.
You know, we'll talk a lot about that. Yeah. Well, no, this is really cool. Well, it's interesting too, Bill, as you say that the, you know, it's changing the relationship we have with it. You know, it's, I have seen so many times when, you know, people are like, well, if I could just, you know, change this in my partner or change that in my partner, it's like, no, you need to change your relationship with your partner, right? Mm-hmm. You don't want to change who your partner is. And that's the same kind of thing with emotion, right? It's not the emotion that you want to change. It's your relationship with it. And then the stuff that is unpleasant, well, it has less impact on you, right?
Yeah.
It doesn't have as much control on you. And you also, and correct me if I'm wrong, then you're able to start to be aware of more of the beautiful energy and emotion that's in your life. Whenever this stops having such a hold on you, or when you stop having such an unhealthy relationship with certain energy and emotional energy, right? What's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, so it's interesting. I mean, I think in general, the what's called the dialogue between Western psychology and Eastern psychology, it's a never-ending dialogue. So there's mm-hmm. no like standard answer for any of this, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. So in one sense, you know, the Buddhist view of you should just be present with everything is super helpful, and it can help a lot of people. But sometimes it can go too far, and a Western approach is better. So if you're having like really chronic anxiety, sometimes just sitting with it over and over and over doesn't really help. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of where, you know, my interest is how to communicate between these two different fields. Or, you know, like for example, with PTSD, sometimes meditation will make those symptoms worse.
Yeah.
I've witnessed that at in-depth retreats with people that had, you know, trauma, and they had traumatic memories coming up, and the meditation teacher said, just sit with it, sit with it, sit with it. And it actually made it their trauma symptoms a lot worse. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting. And I mean, I think that's why we live in such an exciting time where we can kind of play with these two different approaches.
Yeah.
I think in my experience, I've kind of gone to both extremes, where sometimes I just want to sit through things I should probably be working on from a Western view. And sometimes I'm trying to heal something or do therapy to deal with an emotional issue I have, when I should just accept that that's just, you know, part of who I am and mm-hmm. stop fighting it. But yeah, generally speaking, I mean, I think if you're present with the full range of experience, I think in some way it's almost like you suffer more because you're more present with what, you know, the reality of your own emotional pain and moments. But you're also, you know, you're more in touch with reality, which I think has a lot of other pleasurable things, and you can have more meaning in your life. I think if you're more in touch with what you're experiencing, you can have deeper relationships. So I think in general, yeah, the more you're present with the negative emotions, it does kind of open up other, you know, positive emotions as well.
Yeah. Yeah. No, absolutely, man. I think that's very well explained. I love it. Now, question for you. The person who's sitting there and saying, man, I'm just too busy though to sit and to meditate and to do that. Like, you know, break that down. Like how can people get into meditation and or mindfulness whenever they just have a busy life and they just don't have time, or they don't want to put time towards it because it's like, I don't even know what the benefit really is for me yet.
Yeah. Well, first of all, I'm not a evangelist for meditation in the sense that everybody should meditate. I think if you're interested and you're having a problem starting a habit, then yeah, I think there's a lot of tips I have. But, you know, I also think some people, maybe you should meditate, and it's really up to you of what ultimately is going to be helpful. In terms of the busyness, there's a funny Zen saying from Shunryu Suzuki who says that, you know, you should meditate for an hour a day. Unless you're very busy, then you should meditate for 2 hours a day, which I think is funny.
Yeah.
So, you know, the essence of it is that the busyness is a distraction. I know there's a Tibetan teacher that said, you know, something similar, where there was a retreat and a student was saying they're lazy and they can't get a meditation practice. And, you know, his response was like, oh, no, you Westerners aren't lazy. You know, busyness is your laziness. Like, that's, you know, you guys don't really get lazy. Like, the monks in the monastery are lazy, but Westerners, busyness is the thing that you have. So, you know, I think in terms of the if someone came to me with that issue, you know, I would start with, well, why do you want to meditate? And really, you know, what's the motivation? And I think you have to have some clarity about that. So typically, you know, if someone is having some sort of unhappiness in their life, or they're having health issues or whatever, I think it's good to tune into that intention to start a meditation practice and be very clear about it. Mm-hmm. So I think that can help people to stick with it. I think the other thing is, you know, you should start, if you're having an issue, start super, super, super small. Mm-hmm. So make a habit that it's just literally like 1 minute a day. And it's less about the meditation. It's more about like getting in the habit of it. Mm-hmm. So some practical suggestions for that is that you want to piggyback it on another habit that you already do. So, you know, there's a great book I know you and I have spoken about, Atomic Habits, and they talk about habit stacking. So if you religiously have your coffee every morning, or, you know, you make your bed every morning, or whatever, something that you're just in the habit of, just piggyback your practice on that. So after I have my coffee, when I have my last sip, I will meditate for 1 minute. Or, you know, when I have my first sip, I will meditate for 1 minute.
Yep.
So that's, I think something like that will help you get in the rhythm of it, so to start really slow. The other thing I would suggest with starting a meditation practice, it should be fun and pleasurable. Mm-hmm. So you're not trying to just like really, you know, get serious and meditate and stress yourself out, because you're training your mind to be stressed or to force yourself to do something you want to do. And that's never going to really last. Mm-hmm. You should just sit as long as it feels good in the beginning. So if you feel really great for 30 seconds and that's all you want to do, awesome. If over time that becomes 5 minutes, 10 minutes, cool, stick with that. Then in my experience, what I've seen with a lot of people who start a practice is over time, it's usually like from like 30 to 90 days of doing some type of mindfulness practice, people really start to see a difference. Mm-hmm. And we know from research at Harvard, for example, that after 8 weeks of meditation, the brain is physically changing, which is kind of remarkable.
Right.
So the amygdala is getting a little bit smaller and the prefrontal cortex is getting a little bit bigger. But you start to notice, wow, I'm just a little bit less stressed every day. I'm a little bit more present. My mind just feels a little bit more clear. Yeah. So I think if you can get through that first like 8 to 12 weeks, I think then it starts to have kind of an addictive quality. And in the same sense that, you know, I've exercised for most of my life and it's not a habit. I don't have to force myself to do it anymore. It's just something that I don't feel normal if I don't exercise a couple times a week. Mm-hmm. So that would be my advice.
Yeah, no, I love it. And you know, it's really starting with mindfulness, right? And I did an episode on this actually recently about, you know, start with mindfulness, because mindfulness is that right there.
Yeah.
Of, hey, look, when I have a sip of coffee, I'm just going to, you know, boom, do this. And that's an easy way to do it. And also what happens, the science behind it is just amazing, of when you do take, you know, it's like, okay, I'm going to take that sip of coffee and then I'm just going to sit for 60 seconds and just notice. And just notice. Yeah. That right there, you are literally rewiring your brain.
Yeah.
What we know, because of neuroplasticity and so on, like your brain is able to change, and it is saying now, this is what we do. Is when I take a sip of coffee, I do this, and it rewires in the sense of, okay, I'm going to continue to do this. And then your midbrain picks up, this feels good, right? That reward center. And it's going to want to do that, right? As soon as the coffee's getting ready, now it's going to want to do some mindfulness work.
Yeah.
And naturally will go that way. So I think it's great what you're saying. I really like that.
Yeah. Just piggybacking on that. I mean, I think that's why a lot of us might think we don't have a lot of habits, but we all are very habitual. Mm-hmm. So it's more of kind of finding like, what are the things that you do every day religiously? And then that's kind of the easiest way, just to piggyback on that. And for most people, you have like coffee or tea or water or something in the morning, you know, about the same time every day. Or if you have an alarm that goes off the same time every day. So that consistency you can build on, instead of starting something totally from scratch is a lot more difficult.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Yeah. I love this. I think this is fantastic. So tell me just real quick, Bill, I want to hear from you. What is a time where, you know, you have struggled and you've had to rely on just like the little shifts of your day or little habits, routine, something that took you through a pretty difficult time? And like, what was that one or two things that you would shift each day or continue to do that helped you through?
Yeah. So, you know, honestly, it wasn't that long ago. I mean, so I own my own company, which means that I have to do a lot of different sales calls and phone calls. And, you know, I have a lot of different work things, and sometimes they're super stressful. And I've had times where you know, I've just found, wow, the last couple of months, I'm just on my phone or the computer like 12 hours a day. It's just too much. And so I've had to kind of really come back to my practice. And, you know, it's kind of funny, if, you know, the idea that the barber is the last one to get his hair cut, or, mm-hmm. you know, the cobbler is the last one to have nice shoes. So that's kind of been me sometimes, or the therapist that's the last one taking care of myself. So it's I've had to, you know, be humbled and come back to earth to some of the practices that have helped me. So yeah, I mean, meditation for me in the morning is one of the big ones. You know, recently really trying to recommit to that again, because I had kind of lost touch with it. I'm also very much into doing body-based practices. So, you know, in some of the shifts that I've been working on, I talk about how typically we think about meditation as mind over body. You know, it's the cliche, and you really train your mind and you can transcend some of the limitations of your body. And that's what we might call a top-down approach. You're using, you know, the higher levels of the brain to regulate the lower levels of the brain. Mm-hmm. But there's another way we can think about another whole set of practices as body over mind practices. Mm-hmm. So you use the physical body to change what you're experiencing in your mind.
Right.
So for example, just smiling and just taking time to smile, it sounds corny, it sounds silly, but if you do it, it changes how your brain feels. You release neurochemicals and you feel better. Exercise is one of them. One of the little tricks, like sometimes if I'm just really in my own head, I'll take like a really, really hot shower followed by as you know, freezing cold as I can get it shower for a minute or two. But for whatever reason, it's kind of just snaps my system out of where I'm at. And it just, you know, 5 minutes later, I feel very different. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's taken time of, you know, because of my role as a business owner and teacher and everything, I've learned, you know, a thousand of these different types of practices. But you know, sometimes you have to kind of, for me, I at least feel like I have to backslide a little bit to be like, wow, these actually work. And I've forgotten to do them. But yeah, generally meditation and some of those, you know, physical practices really help me.
Yeah, no, that's awesome, man. I appreciate that. And hey, you know, I've known you for a little while now, and I've seen that you really do practice what it is that you're talking about with other people. And I think that's what we need. You know, I'll be honest. I think that's, when I got into graduate school and I was told that, you know, as part of graduate school, you don't have to go through and do your own therapy and your own work. And I thought, this is crap. Like, yeah. I remember getting into an argument with my professor about it. And anyway, that went sideways. But, the reality is there's so many people in our field, both, you know, therapists and coaches who are not doing their own continued work. And I think that's super concerning. Like
it is. Well, it's in the same way. Like if you're going to work with a physical trainer, they should be exercising too. They should be living that lifestyle.
Yeah.
You know, and I think there's another, you know, misconception for people that work with therapists. It's kind of like when you were a young kid and you saw your elementary school teacher or high school mm-hmm. teacher, the supermarket, and you had this epiphany, like this is a real person. They have a life outside of school.
Yeah.
And in therapy, a lot, you know, there's literature on this, but clients will idealize their therapists, that they're just this, you know, perfect person or whatever. But most of the therapists I know are super far from perfect. They have their own anxiety issues or depression or insomnia or whatever it is. So to me, I think it's important as therapists just to acknowledge, like, yeah, I have anxiety too. I get overstressed. I don't always take good care of myself. And to me, part of like what I want to model with the people that I work with is I have the same issues, but these are things that work for me.
Right.
You know, so I should be held accountable too. So it's not that I'm the wise therapist teaching everybody, you know, how to live. It's I'm discovering all this stuff too. And I'm every day trying to figure out how to be happier and take care of myself. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, I've obviously made a lot of progress over the years of studying all of this. But you know, there's this life is a process, obviously. So it's, you know, it's constant learning and evolution.
Yeah. Well, no, and I love that, man. And it's, you know, in working with many different colleagues, some of my favorite people actually, right, in the world. But in working with them, especially in mind current of getting, you know, that rocket and rolling, I've talked with a lot of colleagues who have great ways of going about things and are really good at that. But I only want to have experts in mind current who are practicing it, right? And who recognize, you know what, we're not perfect, man. Come on, like we screw things up all the time, but we're working pretty hard. on our own lives and on our own selves. And that's the flavor that we want. Right. And so I really appreciate that, you know, you do exemplify that and are really showing people the way on that. Again, I'm not perfect, but guess what? I'm doing it. Right. And I'll continue to do it. And that's admirable. Right. I love that. So cool, man. Well, I appreciate this. And I want to encourage people who are listening to jump in to MindCurrent and try some of Bill's shifts and notice, you know, just pay attention to what happens as you do it. As you do play around with his shifts and other shifts in there, and you become more aware of your own emotional energy, you will notice that you will feel better sun up to sundown.
Thank you for listening to the Mind Current podcast. Share the love and let someone know about this episode. And if you haven't experienced the app, go now to mindcurrent.io.